This is exactly right.
Karen, have you heard of Handsome? It's a new podcast from the brilliant comedians Tig Notaro, Fortune Feimster, and Mae Martin.
I have heard of it. People love it. Every week, this handsome trio of hosts takes a question from a famous friend, people like Stephen Colbert, Reese Witherspoon, Jamila Jamil, the Indigo Girls, and then they do their best to answer that question with plenty of hilarious detours along the way.
You're going to love hanging out with Tig, Fortune, and Mae every week, so go check out Handsome wherever you get your podcasts or on YouTube. Listen to a new episode of Handsome every Tuesday.
Are you leaving or are you on your way back home? Either way, we want to be there. Doesn't matter how much baggage you claim. Give us a time and date, terminal and gate. We want to send you off in style. We want to welcome you back home. Tell us all about it. Were you scared or was it fine?
With Karen and Chris.
Welcome to Do You Need a Ride? This is Chris Fairbanks.
And this is Karen Kilgariff.
Hello, Karen.
Hello, Chris. Listener, you need to know the reason the vibe is off on this episode from beginning.
Yeah.
Or on, maybe. Maybe the vibe's on. Chris Fairbanks has shorn his mustache of maybe 3 years, five years?
Yeah. And it does my upper lip look thin and strange like a fish?
It looks lonely and like it's in the snow.
Yeah, the mustache did kind of bring a friendship between my chin and eyes that it feels like I just look like a divorced dad now.
I had to do it.
It's just every once in a while, you got to start over again.
That's right. Start fresh. Also, you did it for Halloween, right? For
your costume. Yeah. I can't be a mustached Elvis on a toilet.
No.
Also,
no.
In real life, the mustaches are gross. If you really think about it, the trace amounts of food, there's probably bacteria. One time in college, there was this guy that I was friends with, even though he had dreadlocks, a white guy with dreadlocks, and he put egg whites and things in them. Bugs fell out of his dreadlocks and into his food, and he got a stomach virus. Now, why could that not happen on a smaller scale with a mustache?
It absolutely happens every day. But I think that your immune system, and any man with a mustache or woman, you're eating just enough bacteria that you're becoming stronger and stronger. No one can kill you.
I believe in that wholeheartedly. I had perfect attendance in elementary school, and I do believe it's because I played in a sandbox that was riddled with cat poop, and I never got sick once.
All these brags. What, you're just adding in brags.
But they're disgusting. So is it really a brag if it makes me gross?
I don't know, man. Cool friend with dreadlocks. I'm just throwing that in there.
We need to introduce our guest. We forgot to tell him.
We didn't.
Sorry. Was I not supposed to talk?
No. We did a bad job of prepping you. That is on us.
Do it.
You are hearing the voice now of our very good friend. He does clubs and colleges across the country. He's a hilarious comedian. Put your ears together for Matt Bronger, everybody.
Thank you. Thank you, Chris. Hi, Karen.
Now we understand what's happening.
Yeah, sorry.
Now we get it.
We're like, Matt, before we get started, Karen and I usually talk 2 to 3 minutes. Oftentimes,
okay.
That's a little speech. No, that's a speech we're supposed to give you.
That's
Why would we just assume you'd know
I got you. Don't feel bad, guys. Please, it's okay.
I feel terrible. Also, because I think I was thinking about the last time you were in the car with us. And in my mind, that was recently. And no joke, it was probably 8 years ago.
So long ago.
It was so long ago.
Yes.
Because I was like, oh, he remembers. Like,
yeah.
And then also the car setup is completely different than a Zoom setup. Nothing about that tracks.
And I feel like after all we've been through, it feels twice as long as it actually was, where it's like, you know, I feel like Karen, you and I are like just these on like a ghastly level of elderly for some reason in a movie. And we're in Adirondack chairs and we're sitting there and we have our dram, the amount we're medically allowed of alcohol or marijuana or whatever, just sitting there. Oh. And there's a nurse that's watching us. And one of us looks, the other one goes and just goes, "Remember us then?" And we laugh, like our skeletal bodies are shit. And no one knows why we're laughing. That's how, after all that's we've us. Been through, it just feels like, and Chris, you're the same. It's the three of us. It's like Cocoon. Before you found out that people in Cocoon were like in their 40s or whatever they were. So depressing.
I'm in the background swimming in the pool, getting that sweet, sweet alien energy.
Yes.
You're like the Don Amici. You're like the incredibly fit old guy. You're like the guy who's you know, just annoyingly ripped, you know. you're the Kurt
Douglas.
He came
alive.
Don Amici. He did have the best breakdance moves in that hilarious scene where they just start breakdancing. You're right, though, that when you first find out Wilford Brimley was just 52 in that, and then they show you a picture.
Is that true?
Yeah, he was just 52, and then they show a picture of Tom Cruise at 52 hanging out of an airplane. It's just two different styles of humans.
I was reading, I was remembering when I read Something Wicked This Way Comes, the Ray Bradbury novel about the, you know, traveling devil circus, and the father's guilt that the evil forces play on is that he had a son at 40. Like, it's just, what have I done? Like, he can't chase him and shit because the kid's like 12 now and, you know, he's 52. So he's about to die, you know, he's written in like the 60s or something. And like, I'm just howling remembering that because I had my kid at 46. Like, oops. Oh, well, I'm utterly screwed.
When that devil carnival comes, you will not be able to handle it.
The guilt that they'll get out of me for sure.
Your papery skinned arm reaching toward your knife. How is your child, Matt?
She's great. She's very, very, very strong and powerful.
Physically.
She was playing with John Roy's son, Griffin, and she tackled him. She tackled him like if Ronnie Lott was in love with you and drunk. And we were barbecuing and Rose just like grabs him and does the textbook hold and use your body weight to just make them fall back and just didn't mean to, but just bop, and Griffin's crying. And like, even now, anytime I bring her out there, she's like, Iffin, I'm sorry. Like, she says it to like no one.
Aww.
And it's the sweetest thing. But it's just like, honey,
she didn't realize. Yeah.
Didn't know.
She didn't know.
She was trying to hug him.
Yeah.
And then
she fully on Lennied him from of Mice and Men.
Also, she's so little that she actually had never experienced falling backwards and getting hurt by it. Like, she was like, this will be fun. It's like being on the bed.
Yeah.
It's like, that's how young she is.
Oh, yeah. I didn't feel anything. But yeah, because Griffin absorbed all of the weight and landed on his back on the pavement.
Well, have you done this thing that all dads have to do at some point with their toddler? It's the trust fall where you stand behind them and then at the last minute you run away.
Is that
just my childhood?
You scream, "That's life," and it's loud.
That's life. And it's going to get worse. Wait till you have to pay taxes.
You scream, "That's life," and you loudly open a beer. Like, gosh. So that just goes with their trauma and their memories. Yeah.
It's making me think about when I was little and we would do stuff and get hurt. And my dad's response was like, it was basically you'd get yelled at for getting hurt. where it's just like, right. What the hell are you doing? See, I told you. Hey, slow down. And it's like, no, I'm crying. And like, there's a big gash on my arm. But like, it's basically like, learn your lesson. Like, it's so nice that parenting has evolved in the last 50 years. So it's not so fucking intense for children.
I will say, they always say you can't react with how you really feel, which is, oh my God, oh my God. You know, don't, because then they're just like, holy shit, it's worse than I thought. You
have to be and like, then they cry.
You have to be like, well, that happened. Hey, you know, pick them up and kind of move them around. So kind of, you know, but I
just be a weird hack.
I certainly wouldn't be like, oh, what the fuck, Rose?
You
know?
You wouldn't go with the Jim Kilgariff style? Okay. I mean, it's your choice.
It's a modified version. I do appreciate his style, his tough love style.
I don't know that because nowadays when I see parents like talk to their kids like they're already adults and everything has to be a discussion and their opinions have to be considered with adult decisions, I'm like, just... Like, I shouldn't have an opinion because I have no child, but I'm getting ready to if one knocks on the door.
Sure.
Just sometimes you have to be like, because I'm the dad.
Yeah.
But when a kid is hurt, I would always care about that.
I'm just impressed by their resilience. Like every kid I see, will just bank its face off the edge of a door frame and then be like, and like, what? Like, it's just, they're made of Nerf. It's only until someone really, you know, Kara wasn't home and I was bringing Rose down. She was running down the hall and she just full on went in, like face just gung to the point where you hear the door, like the wall shake, face. And gets up and is like, like crying. But then I got her in the apartment and then she just like, oh, she's fine. And then running around. But the craziest shiner.
Oh, wow.
The craziest.
Oh, no. That's dangerous.
I'm worried for me.
Yeah.
Where like people will think I full on belted this 2-year-old.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Let's bring her to the grocery store and get some weird looks.
And they.
And the old excuse of I ran into a door.
Yeah.
She really
did. She did. Yeah. I mean, I took her to daycare and like her daycare is the funniest daycare. All the women wear these like neon nurse scrubs and they play out like they speak Spanish to them and stuff. It's great. But they are so honest. They're just like, we were so glad that didn't happen with us.
Yes.
And I was like, thank you for saying that because, you know, you pick your kid up and it's just like, well, I don't know. I guess.
Right.
You know, we hit her with a car by mistake. So. Yeah.
So scary.
So scary. So scary.
Did you have to like baby-proof your place when she's first learning to walk? Did you have to cover corners with pads and stuff?
We did that with the fireplace and like plugged up all the sockets. But like a lot of it, and like you have those cinches, those kidnapping cinches on all the
kidnapping
all the cupboards, all the cupboards.
Oh yeah, yeah, yeah,
yeah, yeah. Yeah. You don't actually use those because then you have to clip them every time. Oh, I forgot. Fuck. Where dishwashing liquid every time they snip it. It's just other than that, like we read up on it, but it's like I wasn't gonna live in a foam house either.
Right.
A lot of it is just kind of I'm always here when she's here, so it's just corrective. No, we don't do that. We don't do that.
I do like your method of just immediately picking her up and moving her around. Like, everything is an experience. Now you're moving in the air in my arms. Are distracted? Okay, run along.
I can still remember babysitting my niece, who is now 15, when she was like 2 or 3 years old and like accidentally slamming her fingers in her. We had this old fucking dresser that was my like grandpa's dresser that then my sister had. And it was just for the other adults to put her little baby, you know, onesies and socks or whatever into. And she was standing there and I was like trying to get it shut and then finally got it, you know, into its groove and just fucking boom. And she had been holding on to it. And it happened 12 years ago. And I get a stomach ache like once a month I remind myself of it, and then I can feel it in my body where I was just like, thank God I'm not a parent, because yeah. you do it all day long. It's horrifying.
My mom and I still think it's the funniest thing, but I think when I was 4 or 5, my dad slammed my head in the trunk of the Pinto station wagon we had. And my dad is 6'6". He's taller than I am.
He is tall.
He's shrunken a little bit, so we're about the same now. But, you know, this was in his prime. This is like early 80s, you know. He's probably about 40 or something, still a strong, tall man. And he says, we were ready to go for a trip. And he put all the bags away, and I'd wandered in and got my big ass head in there. And he's like, all right, you know, said something, you know, whatever, Santa Barbara, here we come. And just, oh, gosh. And he's like, oh my God. And like, I would bring it up and we'd laugh and laugh. And my dad, it took probably 20 years after I was already, you know, 20 or whatever, for him to be like, huh, oh, that was a scary day. He just wouldn't even crack a smile, because it's just the trauma of
life. Yes, truly. Like, you have just accidentally abused a child, and the pain, it's not something small. It's like,
no.
I slammed her fingers into a drawer.
It's
horrifying and sickening.
It's any extremity, face, head, fingers, toes, like, ouch.
My sister did the classic one of, with Adrian's baby at the time, he's now 27. She was holding him and then just turned like this to say something and just smacked his head into the wall. Like, she just like whipped around to do something. And she's like, I think about it all the time. Cause I went to her and was like, I slammed Nora's fingers in the door. And she immediately told me that story. She's like, I literally could have given Johnny brain damage. Like, we know now he has a great job and everything's fine, but it was a scary, like, but kids are, have you ever seen the x-ray of like a baby's face where their teeth go all the way up toward their nose? So they just basically, it looks like they're wearing a little mask of calcium underneath their skin.
Yeah,
that's an image I'm going to avoid, but I have heard that. I guess I've never visualized it.
It protects them.
Yeah.
Like they're very strong.
Yeah, I mean, when Rose was being born, there were complications and we had this doctor that was like, she's so locked in. She's like, all right, well, you know, like I got to get her out there. And, you know, they gathered around. And so they got her out, all that jazz. But I'll never forget like the moment before that. And it's like that moment where you're just like, is she okay? Why are there so many people in this room? And we had, you know, you bring a birth mix. So we just had like 90s R&B and all kinds of stuff. And the doctor, the OBGYN who we were working with, she was like the one, for some reason, like it was her and two young interns. She's around my age and my wife's age. And she's like, okay, we gotta check. We gotta make sure this heartbeat is strong. Okay. The next couple seconds are going to be very important. It's fine. Keep breathing. Keep breathing. Keep pushing. Is this SWV?
What?
and then her two interns are like, I don't know who that is. And she's like, are you fucking kidding? You don't fuck. All right. Push! Like it was just this thing of it relaxed me in the moment where I'm just like, this person is so across it. This person has encountered literally everything that could or will happen. And it's just like, let me take, excuse me. You know, I haven't heard, this is a sweet jam. Yeah. I haven't heard this in a little.
If she remembers SWV, that means she paid attention in medical school and
she's
a really good doctor. Yeah.
That's right. She
if
cares.
You remember that.
She does. She mm-hmm. does. She does. Yeah.
But also you're so right, where the thing that's so scary, of course, to you guys as first time parents, like, this is their job every day. They do, they do 8 of these and go home for dinner. This is standard fare, and problems are standard fare.
Standard fare.
And it's all handleable. It almost makes me go like, did she do that on purpose to basically bring the tension down, to be like, oh, this is a, maybe not actually the emergency you think it is, by the way. Hey. Oh.
And if that's true, great.
Right.
You know, one of my favorite things, we were in that room for so long and it was a nice big one. And this was during 2020. So we had to wear masks the whole time, mm-hmm. but there was a sign on the wall that was huge that spelled out everything, like, if you've brought a doula, here is what they are not allowed to do under any circumstance. It just warmed my non-New Age medicine heart.
Well, and as powerful as like the conviction of a specific type of New Age person is,
right?
I do apologize because I was raised by a registered nurse. You do not fuck with nurses. And like that's the doctor's whatever. You know that a nurse printed that sign and put it up because nurses are the ones that are actually doing stuff
dealing.
Up until the moment.
Yep.
And they're the one. It's like the importance of not introducing doubt into a process that is already so scary. Not that that's what I have no idea what doulas do in any meaningful way, but just that it's about being a team player. So it's like, well, then I guess you need to know the roles and that, follow along.
And, you know, to be fair, I'm sure 90% of doulas are just like, listen, I'm just here. You know, if you need me, I will talk you through. The doctor is the boss.
Well, yes, because you need, it's needed, though, thinking about how gross the medical system can be, where you come in, like, there's a doctor that's like, well, whatever, I don't, you know, that kind of thing, where then just to argue the other side of how important it would be to have, like, a grandma-style person, woman, who's done it a bunch of times and is like, I know the tricks to get you to the point where then that doctor comes in and you deliver this baby.
Yeah.
There's a bunch of other shit that happens before that that's super scary, super important, and, you know, having a lady there that looks like your mom's friend is probably incredibly comforting, you know, if they do it right.
Yeah. And like, I appreciate the nurses were incredible and their human skills were amazing. Like at one point, I mean, my brain was broken. I didn't know what was down, what was up well before she even started giving birth or went into labor. I went and got us coffee and I left Cedars-Sinai and then got back in the building, somehow got back in the hallway and went right into the wrong room. Confidently. And there was a couple that had the baby like an hour ago and she's breastfeeding, no shirt, husband there. And I had two coffees. Hey, I go, oh, I'm so sorry. And I just turned and like, and they just fell out laughing. And I went to the hallway and a nurse, this male nurse is just staring at me, shaking his head. And I'm like, I'm sorry, please don't throw me out. We're going to have a kid. And he's like, I'm not going to throw you out, man. Just go to the right room. And like, and you know, we both had a laugh, but it's like, I walked in on a half naked woman. Sure. Like that's
holding scalding hot coffee. Whoops, new baby.
Whoa. And then just start slowly falling forward.
Early trauma.
Early Jerry Lewis trauma in the hospital.
Scalding baby.
I feel like the funniest Jerry Lewis to me is Martin Short's Jerry Lewis.
When you sent me that video of him.
Scenes from an Idiot's Marriage is the funniest, like, 5 minutes of any TV. Like,
the tender fella thing where he sticks the gas pump in his mouth.
Just spraying gas into his mouth.
I still show that. I show that to ever since you sent me that out of nowhere. I still show that to someone monthly.
Him coming out, well, if you don't know, Karen, it's Jerry Lewis in... what was it, like Tender Fella Mercies.
And
it's Robert Duvall, Tender Mercies, but if it was Jerry Lewis in the Robert Duvall role. And he comes out of the shotgun shack. He drank away all his money and he's been asleep for 3 days. And the woman's like, how are you feeling? He's like, oy, I don't feel good so much. And it's like, it's angry, put upon Jerry Lewis. And then he just goes, full on wild,
physically batshit, so hilarious.
Good. It's so goddamn good.
Love that man.
Yeah,
love that man.
Yeah, that's from an old Showtime comedy special.
Yeah, that's what it was. His own? Showtime. Yeah.
Yeah.
So if he walked in on the topless woman, I think he would just yell, boobies or breasts, or, and he'd throw both cups in his face,
in his own face,
would just scald his own, and just like.
A burn for each boob. Yeah. Oh, that's terrific. How old's Rose?
She's two. She's 2 years, 2 months.
When you were in the hospital and 8 o'clock rolled around, even though you were standing right near nurses, did you still bang pots and pans together in
within the
it's
hospital
8 o'clock.
Walls.
Kang, kang, kang.
Oh.
I'm 3 feet away.
And we're back to Jerry Lewis. No, I just maintained a respectful distance, and whatever they told me to do, I did. That was it. That was it. Yeah.
That's all it takes.
And it was like nobody, you know, nothing's around that hospital besides, you know, a couple retail stores and stuff and office buildings. So there were people would gather on the door, like when they changed shifts, everybody would stop what they were doing and a round of applause.
Sure. Cool.
You know, so that was very cool. That was very cool. At the entrance. Nice. Yeah. Yeah. That was nice. That was nice.
That's over now.
Yeah. Yeah.
No more applause for them.
Yeah.
So insane.
Yeah, my neighborhood, really, Echo Park, really partied at 8. And it lasted about 15 minutes.
Where I live, no one did anything. It was silent. It was just, you could hear a pin drop.
That's
where
it's
just like, why if Hollywood is doing it, why aren't we doing it in the Valley?
Yeah.
That's so crazy. But
because there was nowhere to park. That's what it was. Everyone,
that's what it was.
Yeah, they were in their houses. Like,
it was almost like it was a way to celebrate the medical people, the frontline people, but it was also a way to get out like the, like, I think I might be going insane feeling.
Yeah.
You know what
I
mean? Where it's just like, like that. It's a good release.
Yeah. You're suddenly interacting in agreeance with hundreds of people from a distance. But it was, that's what was really
cool.
It
feels good.
I was in during 2020, we were going to go drive up to Portland to see my folks to bring the baby up. And then, Oregon caught fire, I'm sure you remember.
Yeah.
And then California caught fire because it was jealous. And then we were like, this is a baby with developing lungs. Why don't we drive to Boston? And we drove 3,300 miles with a 6-week-old in an electric car with California plates during an election year. Highly recommend. And we got to her little town outside of Boston, and we lived there as townies for about a month, month and a half.
Oh, cool.
And then we drove back, and we drove back through the South to stay warm, like days ticking down, you know, to the day. And we were in a hotel in New Orleans when they called it for Biden. And it's a blue dot in the reddest state there is.
Yeah.
Right.
And it was everybody walking down the street was either partying their dick and butt off.
Yeah.
Or had this blank stone face. There was no, you know, because this was before it was like, it was stolen before that whole thing was introduced. It was just either I'm in the biggest heaven of my life or I am in the deepest shock of my life.
Yeah.
And
I remember that.
But we both kind of wished we were in LA weeks later, because the stuff that jumped off, like Demi, who shot that thing at that gas station where they're all standing on top of cars.
Oh, wow. And
that gas station is like a stone's throw from our house.
Right.
And I asked him about that. And he was like, he hadn't heard the news, but he goes out in the balcony of his apartment, and a man just walks into like the driveway area, who's just walking around, just blaring a bagpipe. Just and Demi grabs whatever he had, because he plays like 9 instruments, like a flute, and just runs and just starts jamming with him.
Yes.
And like, I was like, oh, because I definitely saw some of that, you know.
People were so happy that they reformed Rusted Root.
Yes.
It's the only way to express it.
That's how else?
My street was dancing and kissing in the street, and the bus couldn't get through, but the bus driver didn't care. They were like cheering. I have a pretty good video on my Instagram of everyone dancing to I Want to Dance with Somebody.
Yeah.
And they're it was like everyone's crying. It was about a lot more than just Biden winning. It was like, oh my God, we're around people.
It was pure relief.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, we had champagne with lunch, and then walked our baby through the quarter and got daiquiris, and like we're like, let's just go to the hotel and then grab like some dinner somewhere. I don't care where. It was more, we felt more, you know, we had this kid to keep alive, so we couldn't go nuts. But it was like we also just were like I just felt a bone deep exhaustion from the last 4 years, and I remember. Because the night before we were in, oh God, it's in the Ozarks, and it's like the one, it's at like Steve Martin lives there, and damn it, what's it called? Just really
Beverly
cool.
Beverly Hills?
Little, Banjo no, Town.
Banjo Town, Beverly Hills. Thank you.
Banjo Town.
It's, It's in the Southeast, and like it was the night of the election, and there were people that were, it was like, oh, we don't know which way it's going to go. It's coming in here and there. And I hadn't even thought about mail-in ballots, and I was like, what is happening?
Yeah.
And guys were driving their pickups in and just antagonizing the hippies in town with Trump flags. And it was like, I don't like how this feels.
Yeah.
Right.
Regardless of who wins, I fucking hate the decorum.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
Where you're just screaming and being an asshole. So like to kind of land in there and just have that like, oh God, you know,
yeah.
I was very surprised that we didn't have any part of us that were like, let's just go dance. Let's go dance around the street, you know, sort of this non-walking baby.
Yeah.
You know, so it was like, oh man. Anyway.
You had to celebrate with her. You had to include her in the celebration.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah. This clueless child
in basically Party Town USA. That's the funniest part. Is like the greatest thing to celebrate and the best place to do it. And you guys are just like, okay, we're turning in. It's 10:30. Yeah,
not a lot of babies at Mardi Gras. There should be.
No, and I will say during 2020 that you know it's like when you go to if you go through the let's say go down Bourbon Street like 7 a.m. Uh-huh. It's the saddest place in the world. You know, it's just like there's cups and barf. It was sad all the time because no one's there and the bars are trying to stay around. Ugh. And, you know, the only people wandering the streets are just, they start talking to you right away and you're like, okay, I don't want any of what you're selling, you know, baby, huh? Yeah. My sister has a baby. You know, I've noticed that. Okay. No. We're not starting. You and I are not talking. Stop walking along with us.
Do not say the word Christ to me. Do not bring him up.
Yeah. And I think it was actually more nefarious than that. It was like someone who's like, you know, could you loan me a, it's just this kind of wandering skeevy dudes.
And then that's when you turn to him and say, I'd love to talk to you about Christ. And then
will you pray with me, sir? Nothing's worth this. Yeah.
Running away.
Mm-hmm.
Oh my, do you feel, Matt, you've been on the road, right? Doing shows.
Sure.
Do you find that strange people are in the audience and feeling empowered and being more vocal than a few years ago? Last night, a very strange, scary dude.
I scaled back my road this year.
Yeah.
And it was the smartest thing I ever did. Like I'm home way more. I'm helping my wife way more. You know, Rose goes to daycare all day. But weekend, she's with us, and that's the way you want it. But when it's just one of us all weekend, it's a lot, you know. The two of us, it's great.
Yeah.
But yeah, I was in this club, this great club called Laugh Camp in St. Paul, Minnesota, and the second show Friday night, these two dudes would not shut up, and I don't mean they're talking; they just kept yelling stuff during my setups, and I'm just like, this. I put out the fire like 6-7 times. And finally went, all right, you guys got to go, man. And the crowd's like applauding because the crowd is turned on them. The crowd is like, don't shut up. And they're like, what? No. And they got walked out by this old bartender. There's no security.
Yeah.
And finished the set, had a good one, went to the bar for a beer with the staff. And I'm just making conversation with the bartender. And I was like, what the hell? Well, those guys were like, what, 25? And he's like, no, they were in their 50s. And that threw me for such a loop that the next night I had a so-so set where I could not get my bearings. Not that I was afraid of people talking to me. I don't really care about that because it eventually gets snuffed. But just how old, drunk, and unaware they were. It just, I was like, who is this?
Yeah.
The worst hecklers I ever had at Crackers in Indianapolis, they wouldn't stop. And I asked them what they did for a living, because, you know, I love crowd work. And they were like, we're high school history teachers. They were teachers. And they were being the most disruptive children in the room, you know?
Yeah. They're like, it's time for me to get some.
Yeah.
Those kids interrupt me all the time.
I'm going to throw a paper airplane at you. They had to be 1950s teachers.
They keep yelling boner like during everyone. You're like, would you stop? Please stop yelling boner.
I feel like also it all is tied together with the communal thread of either people are drinking too much these days, or they're on a ton of fucking pills in that way where they're like, when they're in the real world, it doesn't feel real to them anymore. So they're doing shit like that. I feel like that's like people are just kind of like on drugs or
that's
on
the biggest
stuff.
Part. I think everyone's kind of wasted right now.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And rightfully so.
Look, I get it. It's a time of high anxiety, but it's like, not that you can ever totally check out from reality, but the time to do that is when you're in your early 20s.
Yes.
I'll say all of your 20s, maybe some of your 30s.
Yeah.
You go to a festival and black out. Okay.
Yeah.
Fair. Have friends that look out for you. But it's like, you know, when you get into adulthood and you have some modicum of responsibility, like, okay, for example, your guys, they're teachers, okay? They're like, wouldn't it be crazy if at the lights come up, we just stood up and pulled each other's dicks out of our pants?
Yeah,
wouldn't that
be
crazy? And they do that, and they're like, or whatever. And one of their students is there with their parents, and that fucks up that student's head so bad, where they're like, it wasn't even sexual.
Yeah.
It's not like he wanted to touch his friend's penis. They were just trying to be disgusting.
I do like the mutualism that you just came up with on the top of your head. Like, I'll pull yours out.
It's quite a hypothetical.
To be fair, I said something way cooler than those guys would ever be comfortable to do. Okay. And then this student is just like, fuck, I didn't know Mr. Dorsey was like such a piece of shit.
Yeah,
like,
right.
He seemed like kind of a nerd, but I like the stuff he's talking about, and he has insight. Boy, it's a real Jekyll and Hyde situation when that guy gets drunk.
Yeah. Any civics course, history, it seemed government, those classes seem to be taught, I don't know why, by football coaches and gym teachers. Mm-hmm. And these guys were big, jockey dudes. You know, just locker room poke and tickle.
What's a problem? I had a history teacher who had the whole, you'll grow out of it if you cared about any other strata of society besides your own. You know, it's just like, nope, you'll get it. Someday you'll know that those people, oh God, why are you teaching us history?
Why are you teaching children? Yeah, for real.
Yeah. I also think that all the hecklers are being empowered by this trend now of everyone trying to do a viral
crowd work video. Oh my God.
Like, yes, I don't want to burn my material, so I'm going to do a lot of, hey, what do you do for a living? And and it's kind of, I've noticed it affecting audiences. I get it, and I like crowd work. It's great, but crowds have been chirpy and talky and confident.
It's like the super drunk person that thinks they're helping times 10.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, I know what, you know, that's my cousin does that.
Great. Also, there's a lot of those people, like in the viral videos I've watched of comics that are getting somehow quote unquote attacked, is those hecklers are genuinely stupid. So it's like, it's like a thing where it's kind of like you're trying to be witty toward a barking dog, because that's, they're just drunk and basically going like, I don't have to think the way you think, or it's like, get out of here, Aunt Carol. What are you doing?
Yeah. It's genuinely sad.
Yes.
A lot of those videos where you're like, this is a person with a broken mind and a broken life.
Yes. They went to a comedy club to fight with like premises.
Yeah.
Like, stop it.
But then
doing?
They got drunk, and then you read in the comments that they lost their job or something. It's like, well, I don't want that. I just, maybe I'll stay home.
Yeah,
I had
for real.
A drunk pair of women during my setups. You could just hear them discussing something as loud as we're talking right now.
Oh, no.
In the silence that is there when we're not talking. And everyone kept shushing them. And I was like, I just put them out. Then finally snapped and go. And I just yelled, you got to shut the fuck up. And like, I hate doing that.
Yeah.
I hate when I snap, feel like I lost control and applause. But then, and after the show, people were like, what the fuck is wrong with you? And they were like, well, we were with our friend in the hospital and she has cancer.
Oh,
it was
God.
Like,
no,
all right.
That is nothing. Leave your fucking friend out of it. You were an asshole. The end.
And don't be like, I need to drink 9 drinks this is so hard to get through, and then go to a comedy.
Yeah.
Like, right. Go drink nine drinks at a bar where they like stuff like that.
Yes. Yeah. Where the music is loud and you can be loud too.
Do your thing. Yes. I'll never forget. This reminded me, but it's very off topic. But when I lived in San Francisco, and now that I think back, like, we were living off the fat of the land in the early 90s. It's fucking hilarious. Like, I worked at the Gap and I was able to live in San Francisco and like go out to dinner whenever
that
I
just
was.
Made me laugh.
Insanity. just insane.
So but, right.
We got drunk because that's what we did every weekend, like literally buying Budweiser tall boys, drinking as many as we can, and then going to get like one or two drinks in an actual bar. Cause we had to like, you had to figure out how to get your buzz on.
I did that.
Matt and I have done that together. Continue.
We have. Yeah. Go on.
Right? It's the classic, like when you're 27 and you're like, this is how we're going to do this. We rolled in super drunk to a jazz bar on Market Street where some jazz legend had come to play and the room probably had 50 people in it. We plopped down in a booth and we're just like, anyway, so that fucking guy says to me, and people are like, and like the hardcore shushing we were getting. And I'm like trying to drink like a, you know, a Greyhound or something, and we think that we're just sitting there to drink and smoke and talk over this fucking, it could have been fucking Stan Getz, it could have been the greatest jazz musician of all time, and we were literally treating it like background music, and we were so drunk, and then the vibe, it was like the entire room turned on us, and when we were like, we gotta get out of here, like suddenly we came to like, oh, we fucked this up so bad. But it feels to me like the people that end up being like those ridiculous, like endless hecklers, they're so drunk they can't come up into even feeling that the entire room hates them. They're still way under there.
Yeah, they're what I call invisible drunk. Like, we've all been there where it's like, you're so hammered, you're taking your clothes off. And it's like, fuck, stop.
No one can see me.
You don't, you're like, no, everything's just warm and cool. Everybody's cool. And you're not even like your intellect isn't even adjusting the fact that people's faces are like, oh God, stop. Like, you're shocking everyone. It's that level of lack of awareness.
That's what happened in the most recent where the crowd, the audience member threw that beer at the comic.
Oh, yeah.
And I wish I knew her name right now, but she picked it up and just kept drinking it. I thought it was kind of a badass move. But
incredible.
They did not realize the audience was against them until she said, do you guys think they should stop? And everyone cheered, and that's what all of a sudden they weren't invisible. There was that moment and it caused the guy to throw a beer.
Yeah. Someone took a beer and just as they're throwing it in their mind, they're like, this is fine.
Yeah.
Yes.
Like, this is like, that's a level of drunk that's, I mean, above and beyond the Call of Duty.
Yes,
like,
it
really makes me want to focus on podcasting. I'm like, it does not make me want to go to LAX and fly somewhere.
No. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. I mean, those two guys, there was a guy in front of them who was kind of like your kind of crazy young guy who actually looked like the same look as like Fairbanks 10, 15 years ago when you had the flat bill and that bush of curls behind your head.
Orange shirt.
Oh, curly hair, orange shirt. And he was in front of them and he was about your size. He's turned around and looked right at those guys. He's like, I'm going to beat the fuck out of both you guys. Shut up. And like after the show, the guy was standing there. People were like, hey, way to handle it, shaking my hand. And this kid was like, oh man, I was about to fucking throw down, bro. And I'm like, I know. And I'm glad you didn't. I'm glad.
Yes.
I don't want this to become a fucking, you know, kettle of madness. I don't want anyone to get punched. I don't care what they did.
Right. Yeah.
Like, I don't want this stuff to start. Like, ugh.
Well, and also it doesn't make sense to me at those clubs that don't take action immediately, because I think many of us, if you did the majority of your stage time coming up in Los Angeles and you got to play at places like, you know, the Hollywood Improv or Largo or any of those places where immediately you'd get dragged out of that fucking room. There's no way they would let two drunk guys just sit there and have their way with the show. That ruins everything.
It's tough because that place is, and people, not that you said that, but there are people like, what did security? They did nothing. And I'm like, This club is holding on by a string. Yes, they don't have security.
Right.
They had a small woman doing sound and a bartender who was like almost my dad's age. But I later found out, the guy who told me that they were in their 50s, he had a concealed carry on him. And I was like, oh boy. You imagine his training kicks in. Pop, pop. Just keep going, Bronger. It's Lord. There's two dead bodies.
Oh, that's my closer.
I like that you said they have a small woman doing sound. Like a tall woman would have cost them more, so they had to get a small woman because they were hanging on by the edge.
Just it's all about numbers and mass.
Well, eight-piece band, like a music outfit, they do have an 8-foot-tall woman that comes in for that.
Oh yeah, she does security, does the scheduling.
Yeah.
The more complicated the job, the taller the person. That's how it's always been,
That's
right?
That's how it is. That's how it's always been.
Yeah, at Fable, I did Mike Bridenstine and Mike Holmes' show at Fable.
Yeah, great show.
My crazy guy that was focused on me and was following me around and sitting next to me.
Oh, God.
At such a crazy level where I was just like, I have to engage with him. He's like a lost person. Maybe connecting with him is the way to go, but it wasn't. He was crazy, and they finally kicked him out, and they did a good job of it. So that sometimes,
nice.
Because it was a bar, and there was a bouncer up front. Like, bars have bouncers. Comedy clubs are like, it'll be fine.
Yeah,
it's part of the job. You joke your way through it.
a comedy club is just a bar with a mic.
Yeah.
For real.
Really, all it is. It
doesn't matter even what we're doing on stage, as long as we're selling drinks.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. That's,
A lot of people, I was about to change the subject. Did you have any conclusionary remarks about the current subject?
Not me.
No, I don't know what to do about it. I'm hoping it works itself out and comics find something else to do videos about or whatever.
Most of the guests we have on here, I'd say about more than half of them, we end up talking inevitably about good times at Bridgetown, and it wasn't
until I
read your information sheet.
My favorite topic.
That first year where I stayed in your tall dad's basement.
You did.
Your short dad and your... No, I'm kidding. Your tall... Yeah. Both your parents are very tall and very sweet. And I was in the basement because I was like one of the last comics to be added. But that was one of the second year, maybe. You started that with Andy.
I did. And we had a lot of people who did the real work. And it was awesome. I mostly just watched tape and asked my famouser friends to do it. And then I would do it myself as well. But, even with all the money that came in, of which I never took a dime, I didn't think that was the right thing to do because I didn't do a lot of work for it. And I always had so much fun. They were all making about as much as you'd make at a Burger King.
Right.
Yeah. For a year's worth of work. So it's after 10 years when Andy was like, I think this might be it. I was like, dude, I get it.
Right. Yeah, I get it.
But it's funny that you were in the basement. It was just like there was no money then to put anybody anywhere.
Yeah.
So like people were staying over in friends' houses and all that jazz. And
I hope the people that worked at Bridgetown year after year and even if a one-off year, I hope they understand what a gift they were giving the performers. Because I have so many amazing... I mean, I think I went 2 or 3 years. Every memory I have from there, every performance, every like location, the bartenders, the staff, the people that worked there, the other comics, like it wasn't just like stand-up summer camp. There was this other kind of like really beautiful shared art experience that only those people could have provided for us. And like, a Ron Lynch midnight show where everyone's doing some weird thing he made up and it turned out to be the fucking greatest thing you've ever seen.
Yeah.
Like there was so much of that shit going on at Bridgetown. It truly, especially in quarantine, I thought about different shit we did at Bridgetown so much. Because it was it would be so fun to be in that big party room again. Or it'd be so fun to, whatever idea. And it's just such a lovely, like people did work really hard and volunteered and kind of gave it their all. But it was such a great experience.
Yeah.
It was such a great festival.
Oh, yeah. I yeah, same. Like it, every single year it was different, but the same in that everybody had such a gas, had such a great time. The shows were so incredible. And, you know, I mean, we caught so much hell for our, you know, what some peep comics would call like anti-white dude segregation or whatever. But it was just like, we just had like slots to fill. And it was just like, all right, we're full up white dudes. You know, right, it's just yeah. like, you know, it just, Portland is already such a white place. And I think, you know, like that was the only real negative was Andy would catch hell. No one ever said shit to me. But you know, the positive thing was it laid this groundwork for comedy in Portland was good and had a definite scene, but yeah. now the scene is enormous and has been since like the halfway point, the yeah, 5 year yeah. point of Bridgetown. Like it's so great there. Like, you know, Kanane lives there now. He lives
yeah,
in,
yeah, I saw
lives
him.
In Beaverton with Rachel. And like, he just does gigs in town and he's always telling me, he's like, fuck, everyone's so good. He's like, yeah. I feel terrible, you know, no. sometimes, you know. Well, just that, but don't you? I mean, every comic, I play the Comedy Store once or twice a week and I'll always go there and I'll watch at least two people that make me feel like dog shit. And
yes, it's
like,
good.
Where I'm just like, yeah, you need that. You need someone who's just like, God damn it. Why do I have to follow?
And that is a new thing. Yeah. People are getting good, and I like that. I'm not. Yes. Yeah, yeah. Not everyone's doing crowd work videos. There's so no. many comics are so amazing right
so
now.
So amazing. Well, and the people watching other people over the years, it's like the benefit of being somebody that's starting or 5 years in right now is all of the people who did it before, right? So it's right. like it's the natural progression, and it is the perfect thing for like a person who's like a stand-up comic personality to have all of their jealousy triggered, because it's like, that's how good I wanted to be. And like the last yeah. time I did stand-up, like I had to follow James Fritz. Have you had to follow James Fritz lately? Like his shit is about important things right now that people are talking about, but the jokes are amazing. He is fucking hilarious, completely authentic. So it's that kind of thing where I'm like, I don't need to do this. If this is the level that people are doing, right. I have had my chance. And like, right. and God bless everybody do this level, because I'm bringing the level down with I'm actually reading my tweets out loud and basically telling everybody I don't care enough to try. And then meanwhile, people are putting together like, it's not just like late night sets anymore. People are putting together one man or woman shows and just doing them like 15-minute increments. It's beautiful. Yeah.
No, I have two that I consistently have to fucking follow. It makes me furious. Rick Ingram, who is like the greatest living crowdwork man of all time. Like that guy, Chris Rock, took him on tour like all through Europe. And I would die to see him just roast a French crowd or whatever.
Yeah, yeah.
He just says the craziest shit to people and just never has material. And I'm just like, fuck you. I've been trying to write all day. And then, you know, Fahim Anwar will just do the silliest premise and it will just destroy.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And he's never not funny. Like it's, you know, and I've told him that. It's just, he's one of those guys. And he's one of those guys who like the biggest names be like, oh, Fahim's up, you know?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And it's just, but it's like, I still get that definite imposter syndrome from them and others. But it's like, so what? You know, yes, like you yes. still,
yeah,
that's part just, of it.
It is part of it.
It's part of the engine. It's like it's the fuel in the engine that gets you so that you you do the next thing and the bigger thing and take a bigger bite.
Well, and Rick is so negative that when he found out I quit my podcast, he was so jealous. Like he's in the parking lot. He's like, he quit his fucking podcast. You can do that? God damn it, Bronk. You're a better man. And I hate it. You know. What, for quitting? I've inspired you by giving up.
Yeah, I really had a feeling last night when I of getting older, my career having been going on a long time, is that I wrote some jokes and I wrote them on a piece of paper. And then I was on stage, and because there wasn't a stark spotlight, I looked down at my notes and it was just blurry. I couldn't read.
Oh, God.
Because
I
need these reading glasses now. And I sat on them, as you can see, they're. It's just one arm, whatever. So last time, I'm like, well, I have new jokes here, but it's a series of vague and watercolor stripes. I have no idea what I wrote down.
Do you have anything you want to plug before we go?
Yeah, my special Doug, which is named after a terrible man my wife and I met on vacation once, is on everywhere on video on demand. It's just, I tell the story of me driving across country, us having the baby, how fatherhood has just changed me. And also looking back on my garbage days and how actually being with a pirate woman partner has made life a lot more fun.
Yeah.
So that's out there. And yeah.
Nice.
Check out Doug.
That's
check
great. Out Doug. And this episode of Do You Need a Ride, we're going to go ahead and dedicate to Doug.
Please do.
This one's for Doug.
That piece of shit.
Awesome. Thanks for being here,
Matt. You're
the best,
Matt. Thanks for being
here. Oh, thanks for having me, guys. This is awesome.
It was awesome.
Appreciate it. Love you both.
We had fun. You've been listening to Do You Need a Ride? DYN.
AR!
This has been an Exactly Right production.
Produced by Annalise Nelson.
Mixed by Edson Choi.
Our talent booker is Patrick Kottner.
Theme song by Karen Kilgariff.
Artwork by Chris Fairbanks. Follow the show on Instagram, Twitter, and Facebook at Dynar Podcast. That's DYNAR Podcast.
For more information, go to exactlyrightmedia.com.
Thank you.
Oh, you're welcome.
Follow Do You Need a Ride on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you like to listen so you never miss an episode.
If you like what you hear, rate and review the show.
And visit the exactlyrightstore.com to purchase Do You Need a Ride merch.